If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
Don't give up. Have dreams. And even if you feel that they don't happen today, one day they will. But don't give up. And having that consistency in life and at work, of course, it's going to be ups and downs in the business. It's normal. But just having that I can't in your head, not in your head. You can do it, just do it, and don't have regrets.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today I'm joined by Carolina Willis.
If I'm not happy with something, I make changes. I go for it. Yeah. I take risk in life, and I don't want to regret something I could have done.
Carolina is the CEO of Intercare Recruitment in South Carolina, and they recruit healthcare professionals nationally.
Every day I wake up, I have a new idea. I've got that entrepreneur drive in me to do something good for people. I decided to open my own, go solo. We came up with Intercare because it's international care. We started bringing physicians from the UK, lots of physicians from the US, nurses from the Philippines, nurses from UK, nurses from Europe. So We had that drive, international drive.
This is a really special episode because Carolina is a client of ours, so it's amazing to be able to sit with her in person. And second reason why it's so special is that we're recording this live in Tampa, just coming off our two-day live summit in St. Petersburg. Carolina, thank you so much. I'm excited to be doing this today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
All right. So Carolina, you have a lot of experience in recruiting. Tell me how you got into the business, because I think this is an international story that spans Poland, UK, UAE, and then the United States. So,
yeah, it's a very international journey. I was born in Poland, and then my family decided to move to UK for better opportunities, and I finished my school in the UK. And I always wanted to be in healthcare. I'm a people person, and I love to help people. And healthcare professionals, what they do, they help people. So when I was looking at part-time opportunities in the UK, I came across an advert, healthcare recruiter in the NHS, which is the governmental healthcare. I applied. And the next day I got a call, no experience in recruitment. I received a call for an interview and I got the job. Like 2 days after I got the job, I started recruiting nurses and physicians for the National Health Trust. I started organizing big events in Europe already. In my 6 months of working there, I excelled so fast. I became a manager and started leading recruiters, started leading events, European events for international nurses to bring them to NHS. So I did that for quite a while, very successfully. I fell in love. I have that passion for healthcare that also helps me. And one day I woke up and I decided to go to Dubai. I told myself, I've got enough of the rainy weather, cold weather. Let's move to somewhere warm, somewhere where healthcare is expanding. At that time, I saw the potential of making my career in the Middle East. And I got a ticket without a job. I went to Dubai, landed in the sand in a desert, and got a job in 2 days with my experience back from UK. Started working for a couple of companies in the same healthcare recruitment, recruiting nurses, recruiting physicians. But I had that drive in me. I have to do it on my own. Every day I wake up, I have a new idea. I've got that entrepreneur ideas and drive in me to to do something good for people. And I decided to open my own, go solo, along with my now husband, where I met in Dubai. He is from the UK, and we met in Dubai. And I told him, I'll go solo, I'll start recruiting. We came up with InterCare because it's international care. We started bringing physicians from the UK, lots of physicians from the US, nurses from the Philippines, nurses from UK, nurses from Europe. So we had that drive, international drive. And we did for some time. And then I woke up one day again with a new idea.
Seems to be a pattern emerging here.
Yes. And I said, shall we try somewhere else? To my husband. He said, oh yeah, here you go again, a new idea. But we've been recruiting so many nurses and physicians from the US. They said, you do such a great job by bringing us here, your service you provide for us, the care that you give for people. Why don't you expand your services in the US? And I said, oh, that's what I thought. Maybe US, that will be the next country I'm going to move to. I was thinking about Australia, Singapore. But then I said, okay, let's try the US. And in 2015, we landed in New York. We moved to Florida first because we had good friends. Doctors that I placed in Dubai, they invited us to America. And we said, yeah, we're expanding our services to United States. And that's how I started my career here in the United States.
Amazing. Thank you for telling me that story. I don't think I'd heard that a full version of it. So that's brilliant. So how did you end up in South Carolina?
I was in Florida for 7 years. Okay. And we just realized that it wasn't for us, the state, and we just wanted some four-season weather.
Okay.
And coming from Europe, South Carolina really reminds us back home in England, and we decided to settle in Greenville, South Carolina.
Fantastic. So I want to mainly focus on InterCare, because your trajectory has been incredible and your growth and everything. But I just want to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned so far. One is you applied for this job as a recruiter in healthcare, and you did really, really well. Like in 6 months, you already were a manager and you're planning events and this kind of thing. So what were the attributes, the qualities that you think helped you to be successful in such a short space of time?
I believe working hard, persistence. I persisted in making myself confident that I can do it. There's no word for me, I can't. We can achieve everything in life if you really want and working hard for it. Hard work. Really, I stayed over working hours and I really wanted to achieve something, become a leader. And so I can teach other recruiters how to do recruitment in healthcare.
And where does that, like, you sound like there's a lot of drive there and, you know, your belief that, you know, there's no such thing as can't, you can achieve anything in life if you work hard. And where does that come from?
I'm a very competitive person. My father is a professional runner, so he attends a lot of competition. He's an Olympic runner. Wow. So I do believe I have that from him, a drive, and then being competitive. You have to start, but you have to finish. And don't stop before the finish. He always taught me about that. So I always, when I start something, I make sure I finish that project.
Cool. So your dad obviously was a role model in that case. Yeah. How did your family instill those values of like hard work and, you know, going for it and finishing things, seeing things through and really being committed and competitive? How did you experience that growing up?
Being born in small town in Poland, obviously at that time it wasn't a rich country. So I had that drive. I wanted to do better than my parents. I'm not coming from a very rich family. Only my father is a sportsman and my mom was looking after us, myself and my brother, who lives in the UK. And I had that drive to become someone better. And like I said, I love helping people, and healthcare is the only sector that you help, not just on the medical side, but you being kind to people and help people. I think that's what drives me also.
Love it. So the second thing I wanted to pick up on, Carolina, is you mentioned these big events and European events for like recruitment drives. And this is kind of a recurring theme. This is a strategy now that you've leveraged for your U.S. clients. So we're going to come on to that. But it sounds like that started way back when you first got into recruiting. Absolutely. So can you explain a little more about this concept of these events and how that helps you to generate candidates for your clients?
Yeah, so working with many hospitals in the NHS, like Royal Manchester Infirmary, St. Thomas Hospital back in London, they had a huge volume of nurses' needs, hundreds, 200, 300 nurses. Knowing back then the shortage of nurses was still high, we had to go outside. So that was my idea to bring to NHS. Because I'm from Poland and we have a lot of Polish people in the UK, I realized let's touch to Eastern Europe, Romania, Poland, Slovakia, even Spanish nurses, Italian. We came up with the idea and we were organizing events across Europe to bring 200, 300 nurses to event, to one hospital. I arranged interviewing candidates. We didn't have AI like we have now, so we had to really do our research on job boards, platforms, social media. It wasn't as popular as now, so it was more difficult to find candidates, but I still managed to find. I connected with other agencies in those countries, reached out to them, so they were supplying us the nurses to NHS.
Wow, this is, sounds like a massive amount of orchestration that needs to go into this. So can you describe, like, what is it physically like if I'm going to this event and there's like 200 or 300 people there, what happens at this?
So we had the client on site,
So the client comes with you.
Yes. The client comes with us and they have 100 to 200 nurses, and we spend there 5 to 6 days, sometimes 1 week, to interviewing these nurses. So we didn't have all of them in one day, but we had like 20, 30 nurses per day. And the client came with us. We had qualified recruiters in healthcare helping interviewing them. And they were signing contracts there and then.
Wow. So they're actually signing people up and
bringing them like, over.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's really interesting. So something worth mentioning to our listeners is what I hope most of our listeners are smart enough to realize, like, whatever market sector you're in, whatever niche you serve, there's always transferable skills and strategies that you can apply to your own business and adapt. So it would be a mistake to go, oh, that only applies to healthcare and I'm not in that. So, it's thinking about how could I. Because the key thing I'm taking away here is this is really thinking outside the box, right? It's thinking we have a shortage here, but there's lots of nurses over there. Yeah. So what stops us from just recruiting them from there to bring them here? And this high volume approach is really fascinating. So let's talk about intracare recruitment then. So you have experienced rapid growth over the last couple of years, but I'm sure there's been some challenging times as well. So, like, tell me about that first year, 2 years of running your own business for the first time.
Yeah. So, in the US or?
Where? No, like, take me to, back to the beginning, because you started in the UK, right?
No, I started in Dubai.
Oh, Dubai. Yeah.
NHS was England. And then in Dubai, I did work for a couple of companies there. And then I decided to go solo. So, in Dubai, was just myself and my husband, Anthony. And it was hard work to go beyond the business development. I had to do business development, find candidates. The candidates wasn't as difficult to find because I already had that database of candidates from my previous roles, and I created that relationship that they always refer candidates for me for the service I provide. So it was a hard work the first year, still in different country. I had to learn the legalities. Healthcare is more complex because you really have to understand what every physician does, what nurse, different licensure in different parts of the UAE. Dubai has different license for nurses than Abu Dhabi. So I had to learn all that. Then I expanded to Saudi Arabia. So I was slowly expanding the market. And then we were very successful. We were growing to the point where I really wanted to have a team. Because it was my just two, the two of us. But then, like I said, I woke up one day with another idea. I need something bigger than that. I like challenges. I don't like easy things. And yeah, and we decided to come to US.
Okay, so it sounds like in the early days, finding candidates wasn't a challenge for you, but there was the legislation and the regulations around the healthcare industry, and different regions have different licensing requirements and so on. So that's one challenge, is navigating all that. But then the other challenge is business development, because if you're working for a big company, then they have accounts. They already have, for example, accounts with hospitals and that sort of thing. So how did you go about winning those first? And I think in healthcare, especially, if you're dealing with, say, tech startups, and you're a small company, they're a small company, yes, you're a CEO, they're a CEO, mm-hmm, there's easier access, right? But if you're a tiny company and you want to do business with a major hospital, then how do you even go about that?
Well, the way I did it, I just said, Anthony, let's put our jackets on, suits on. Let's go drive to every hospital in Dubai and go through the doors, ask for HR director to set up a CEO meetings.
And so you physically just went, showed up. Okay.
Seriously. So. I physically showed up. And right. Anthony was like, really? You cannot just show up. I said, let's do it. Let's show up. So we can do this. We've done it. I've done it for the other company. I can do it for myself. And I did have some connections from my previous companies. Sure. So yeah, that's what we did. And first HR's like, no, they don't want to talk to you. I said, okay, no problem. Let's go to the next one. And that's how we started. And then that first door opened.
Okay. This is huge. I need to explore this further. So first of all, that's quite great. Not many people do that these days, is literally, like, people think cold calling on the phone is hard, but physically showing, like, cold calling in person, that's real old school. And then, so you'd go in and, like, talk me through the scene. Imagine going to a hospital, which is this huge building. How do you even know who to talk to?
I did the research before.
Okay.
Of course. And Dubai had once a year conference called Arab Health.
Okay.
That's the biggest Middle Eastern healthcare conference. So I attended that conferences. So I knew people.
Okay.
And I knew the names, and I'm a researcher. I love researching. I love reading. I love researching. So my husband always said, you should be a detective, because you love challenges and you love the hardest stuff to research on. And I was, before I really went to step ahead, I was researching a lot.
Got it. Okay. So you weren't just walking in blind. You had done your research.
Yeah,
you knew who the people were. Got it. So you walk in and they say, no, they don't want to meet you.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, no problem. On to the next one.
Yeah.
And then a door opened, is what you said. But how many different places did you visit before someone agreed to meet you?
It took us a couple of weeks.
Okay, wow.
Every single day, that was full day. We were driving from Dubai to Abu Dhabi to different cities. The good thing about the UAE, it's small. You can really drive. Here in the US, of course, you can. Right. You have to fly everywhere. But we're just going door to door and talking to people and kind of introduce ourselves to show our branding, who we are, Intercare. And some of them, they knew us from my previous company. So they're like, yeah, we would like to work with you. That's what happened.
So you spent a couple of weeks driving around, visiting hospital after hospital. Do you have any idea, like, how many places you would have tried before you got the first yes?
That was over 12 hospitals.
12 hospitals.
12 hospitals,
okay. And then
I remember the 13 was my lucky number.
Oh, there you go. All right. Awesome. And what was that first opportunity then?
That was a big hospital, one of the leading hospitals in Dubai. They knew me from my previous company and they liked the style I worked, and they signed up with me.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. So that's super cool. But so that's one challenge is business development, but it sounds like you just were relentless in your, you were very well researched.
Yeah.
You leveraged connections you'd made in your network, but then you just put yourself out there and just kept going until you got the result.
And I think also being a woman in Dubai helped me a lot.
Really? Why is that?
The Arabic mentality, they like to deal with women.
Okay.
And I think that was my also strength to go there and really talk to the CEOs, and they listened to me. Yeah.
Okay. This is something I'd like to, because you mentioned ask for the HR director, but to try and get a CEO meeting.
Yeah.
That's another tricky thing to do because the HR contact doesn't necessarily want you talking to the CEO as well. So how do you navigate the politics of that so that you win over the HR person and you also get access to the C-suite?
Well, I'm a CEO.
Yeah.
I've got that entrepreneur ideas and business mind. So I would like to talk to the business person who is the decision maker, the CEO. And I was always asking for the CEO either if they couldn't see me that time. They gave me the contact details. It was way easier in Dubai than it's here.
Okay.
So that was the easiest part. And then, I was just calling that person.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever, though, find yourself in a situation where the HR person didn't want you to talk to the CEO? They said, no, you only do business with us.
Yeah, like some of the largest hospitals, they said, we're dealing with recruitment. So I stepped away. I said, I'll come back. And again, that consistency, perseverance in what you do, if it doesn't happen today, it will happen in the future. Just keep going. And that was me.
All right. I love it. Were there any other kind of challenges or roadblocks that, you know, in those early couple of years that?
The biggest challenge we had is to get payments. Mm-hmm. So when we were placing candidates, physicians, nurses, we were struggling to get paid.
Okay. That is... This is a huge challenge for small businesses. I don't think it gets talked about enough. And, you know, if you don't get, you can make placements, you can make sales, but if you don't get paid, then, you know, the sale isn't really closed until the money's in the bank, right?
Correct. Yes.
And otherwise, it's just all theoretical until that money is in your account. Yeah. So what was the reason that the payment, like the debtor days were slow, and how did you overcome that?
Yeah, I mean, we had to go in person again and really ask for the money. Our physicians were working, but we never got paid. Mm-hmm. And we were really tired of that, for sending good qualified physicians or nurses, and we didn't get paid. And to go into legal matters, it was too expensive. And if you don't really speak Arabic, you cannot win in legal cases in the UAE, in the Middle East. So that's drove me kind of to step away from the Middle East and look for another opportunities elsewhere.
That's understandable. But obviously you did manage to collect, I hope.
Yes, we did. We did.
Mentioned showing up in person.
But it took a year or two to collect all the money that we needed. Yeah.
Okay.
So we were just... In that situation, it was just myself and my husband. But if we had children, that would be a different story.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's rough. So how did that affect? Well, let me just finish asking. So it sounds like your same mindset when it comes to business development, you can apply to credit control as well, right? Being persistent,
absolutely,
showing up in person. Were there any other ways that you found were successful at getting paid faster?
No, we had to go in person.
Okay.
It was,
All right. So, because this is an issue that comes up in any country, right?
Any country,
Especially, do you know what? I find bigger companies and organizations are the worst. They take the longest to pay.
Yeah.
And there's this weird, like, as a small business, you almost feel like you have to accept it. Because especially if you're getting a large percentage of your business from a big company, then you're sort of,
I don't think you are stuck. I think you always have choice, but it can feel like, well, I just have to accept it's like, you know, 60, 90, 120 days till I get paid because otherwise we can't work with that big customer. And I would argue, first of all, you always have a choice which clients you want to partner with, right? And if they're genuinely not going to pay you for that long, cash is king for small businesses. So personally, I would be looking for new and better clients in that scenario, which I guess is kind of what you did.
We did. Ultimately. Yes, we did. We found some good ones at the end, really good ones that even offered me to become their CEO of a hospital.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. But our mind was already set on Florida. We had everything arranged, but they said, please, you know, come and work with us. We saw your achievements in the UAE and they wanted me to become the hospital CEO.
So wait a second. I need to hear this story because this is a turn, a twist in the tail that I hadn't expected. Just before I hear that, on the subject of credit control, second thing apart from choosing the clients is also realizing everything is negotiable, even if it's a big company, that you can get those payment days down. And thirdly, what is your process for credit control? Like, do you have a step by? And most small businesses don't, right? They don't have. Yeah. They send an invoice, and then if it doesn't come in, then they follow up and, you know, ask for payment. But I think you do need a robust credit control process.
Absolutely, yeah.
But so I wasn't expecting this to come up. You were recruited to become a CEO of a hospital.
Yeah.
Tell me that story.
Of a medical group. Yeah.
Of a medical group.
They were kind of behavioral health, home health organization, and I did a lot of recruiting for them.
Okay.
I implemented some recruitment strategies on a high volume of nurses from the Philippines and India. And I kind of managed their team as well as the recruiters and some operational team. And they liked the way I worked. And one day the investor asked me if I can become a CEO because the current CEO is going back to US. He was from America. And I said, I would love to, but I already have different plans and we're leaving the UAE.
Were you tempted at all or?
I was tempted.
It's flattering anyway.
Yeah. But then I had my mission. Yeah. I want to be somewhere else. I want to be the leader and I want to work for myself.
Okay. I totally get that. I can't, I'm exactly the same. I think I've worked for myself for this long now. I can't picture myself going back into a corporate environment. You've teased a couple of ideas about recruiting in the Philippines, recruiting in India. I want to circle back to those because those are kind of like in your toolkit strategies that you kind of go back to. So move to Florida, kind of starting over again.
Yeah, that's right? Another challenge.
So even though the business has been established for a while, you're going into a brand new market. So it's almost like a whole new business.
Yeah.
What year was this, Carolina?
2015.
Okay.
2015, we relocated to Florida. And I thought it's going to be easy like Dubai. You can go to hospitals and ask for CEOs, but of course it wasn't. And I kind of panicked. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how large is the market here and how competitive. Different state is like different country, different laws, regulars, licenses for healthcare professionals. So I kind of panicked and I said to Anthony, I don't know if I can do it here. I know in the Middle East it was smaller. We can, you know, go and drive and show in person because I like that approach, showing in person to your clients. But here, how can we drive everywhere or fly every day? And so I decided to put on hold. I said, let's put on hold. We didn't close the company. We just put on hold. And I went to work for a couple of companies to learn the market, to learn how they do it. I learned everything, kind of not the recruiting side because that foundation was already there from NHS, back from Dubai, but just how everything works here because it's a different country.
Makes sense.
Different states. So I did that. And then again, 2022. No, I cannot work for anybody else. I have my mission. I have my purpose. This is a different way I do business. For me, it's about the quality, really helping people, really giving them opportunity for the American dream. That's what I had. And I had the opportunity to come to this country. And I want to give the opportunity to others.
Love it. So how long did you put the business on hold and kind of go back to the drawing board, learn new ways of working?
So the first year, kind of, we were trying to get clients, but it was very difficult because coming from different country and I didn't know where to go. I'm like, it's such a big country. Where shall I go? Florida. And then we were in Florida. We tried a few clients and everybody was like on contingency, which I don't work on contingency. In Dubai, I was all on retainer as well, retained. So I was like, so the first year we did some recruitments, the second year too, and then I decided to go and work for somebody, some large companies, don't want to mention the names, but big companies. And in 2022, it was the end, I decided. So I worked for kind of 5-6 years for somebody else, like on and off, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Got it. So then you've got InterCare version 2.0, yes. Right? 2022. And how did you go from there? So now you know you're more, you know the country, yeah. You know how everything works. You obviously have a huge foundation to draw upon. So what happened next?
Yeah, I had to leave full-time job. It was a big step for me.
Sure.
Having two little children.
How old were they at that point?
One was 3, mm-hmm. And I just gave birth.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh, Caroline.
No, one was 4. Sorry, one was 1. So
4 and 1. Still,
4 and 1. That's, yeah. So still being full-time mom. And I said to Anthony, he was the one pushing me.
Okay.
Eventually, I really
I can picture that.
Really good support.
He's your biggest supporter, isn't
he? He's my biggest rock in my life. And he is always supporting me. And he said, well, it's only me who's going to pick up the pieces. So he always supports me and have that ambition in me and motivation in me too. And yeah, so I told, let's do it. Let's go solo again with 2 little children. Mortgage on my head. I have to make some money. Anthony was still working, but then we decided that, no, you'll take over the kids and anything else, and I'll run the show.
Oh, brilliant.
And so that was a big risk.
Yeah.
Both of us really completely.
So he became
a consultant. He was like a primary consultant. And as it's, you are going to be with the children,
yep.
Helping me also. He's still in the business, financial, all that financial stuff he does. But I'm kind of running the show.
Yeah.
So it was difficult at the beginning. Really tons of work, working hours, long working hours, small children. You know, they wanted mommy all the time. And yeah, it was a really difficult to the point where I wanted to give up. The first time in my career, I said, I cannot do it.
Wow. At what point was this, Carolina? So
the first year, I started in 2023, beginning like January, because at the end of 2022, that was my idea, kind of slowly stepping down from my other company and going solo. And the 2023 was, that was a rough one. Really, you know, having a few months without paychecks, that was tough. And I was in a dark room many times.
And so what was going through your head at that point where you're feeling like, I don't know if I can do this, that it does, because it sounds like you hadn't really suffered from any self-doubt up until this point. And so that must have been quite a shock.
The tons of work I had to do, and being a mom, so I had 2 full-time jobs. I was sleepless nights, couldn't work. I worked all day, couldn't sleep all night. So it was to the point where I was breaking down, and I said, I cannot do this. And again, Anthony came to me and said, you can. You've done it for a long time. You've got this. And I said, yes, I'm a soldier. I am not going to give up. This is an opportunity. My girls will be proud of their mom. And I have to do it for other people. I want to show them I can do it. I need to bring these other people from outside of America and fulfill their American dream. And that was my purpose. Again, helping people. And I love this business. It's all about relationship, all about helping. And that's what I didn't give up.
Carolina, so the period where you were really at the breaking point, how long did that last for? And what impact did that have in terms of like emotionally and your family and everything?
Yeah, I had a mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. I was in a stage where, you know, I had to be picked up. I did reach out to you, I remember, beginning of 2024. But then I didn't have the funds. I was like, you know, we were using all our savings because we had to still invest in the business and pay our mortgage and still survive. We had two little children. And it took me some time since I reached out to you.
And so it sounds like Anthony was a huge rock for you, and you are a very resilient person, but there must be more to the story than that. Like, how did you pick yourself back up and find the sort of, where did that come from to be able to keep going?
First of all, we left Florida. Okay. We moved to South Carolina. And that was the point. I think the heat here was too hot. I was giving up. It was just nonstop hot. And I felt that I need to change. I need to make changes. If I'm not happy, I need to make change. The same way I did in the UK, I did in Dubai. If I'm not happy with something, I make changes. I go for it. Yeah. I take risk in life, and I don't want to regret something I could have done. Yeah. And so we moved, so that start fresh, and that brought me like a fresh air into my head, really a new environment, and new ideas, and totally told myself I can do it.
Love it. Okay, so let's talk about, now you have a wealth of experience in healthcare recruiting, and you've seen it done in different countries, in the UK, in the Middle East. And now you knew how to make it work in the States. So what changes did you make? How did you approach the marketplace differently in order to adapt to working in America?
Definitely, the business development here, it's different. So I started cold calling. Back when I started in UK, I didn't have any AIs or systems. It was just phone and phone book, and we had to go for the client. So here the same. I was just cold calling, emailing, attending conferences, just show myself in person. That helped a lot. Conferences, joining associations, really getting out there to show my presence.
Absolutely. I love this. So this is like kind of foundational, but a lot of recruiters don't do it. So cold calling, attending conferences, joining associations, and as you said, like putting yourself out there and being present and raising your profile. So a couple of quick questions on that, and then I'd love to talk about your growth and building a team and everything. First of all, there's so many conferences. How do you choose? And they can be very expensive, and this is the challenge that recruiters have is, how do you know which ones are worthwhile and which ones are going to be a waste of time?
Again, going back to Dubai, I wanted to deal with CEOs. Mm-hmm. I'm going to these conferences where the CEOs are there. So like a leadership, CEOs of hospitals. We get invitation for the associations conferences we're part of North Dakota Healthcare Association, Colorado Healthcare Association. So we're getting a free booth to advertise ourselves, and that's the way we continue.
Got it. This is super smart, and it's a very underutilized strategy. Is when you have a niche, What are the major trade or professional associations that serve that particular community? And why don't you become a member, get involved, attend their events? You know, that because that's like a ready-made audience of your exact.
They are the buyers. They are the buyers and the customers. So they want your product. And I really research which is the best. Of course, I cannot go to all because estates are huge, but I'm looking at the biggest and some even of the smaller areas where really they need nurses. Rural healthcare in the US, it's underserved. And I would love to help people in those areas. So again, we're approaching rural healthcare in the United States because there's a big shortage of healthcare professionals there.
Okay, fantastic. So let's talk about your service offering because it's very interesting. And you mentioned, well, first of all, it's retained. Yes. And second of all, it involves recruiting nurses internationally. So what is your solution? Like, how do you, what do you do for your market that solves their problem?
So what I call ourselves, we are kind of boutique company, small, quality focus, concierge type of agency. We really go beyond with our services. We really get on site with our clients. I like to get in touch with either the CEO or the CFO, C-levels. We sit down, we put down a strategy in place, how we can help. Because dealing with HR here in America, what I've realized, they're kind of afraid of recruiters. So what I'm telling them, don't be afraid of us. We are kind of extending your recruitment team. We are your extension. And by helping you, you will get promoted because, you know, you met your KPIs, your internal KPIs. So we sit down with our clients. We really go beyond and above to really making feel them valued and the quality we provide. It's, for me, it's all about quality in the service.
That's awesome. But you also can back it up because you're doing things that most other recruitment agencies in that market are not doing. So like this whole international thing, can you describe how that works?
Yes, we connect with international nurses. All of them now comes from referrals because we've placed so many nurses and, you know, they call the Philippines is the nursing hub. Yeah. So they all know each other. We have connection with some nursing schools now back in the Philippines. We provide the full service for them, immigration, onboarding, helping them with flights. And when they arrive here, we're helping them with getting their social security, with driving license, so really going beyond and above. And the other good thing about our company is all our recruiters are nurses.
Oh.
So they speak the same language. They have that connection from day one.
Okay, that's interesting. I want to hear more about your team in a second. But so are you replicating what you did back in the UK over here in the States?
In the US,
so going to other countries, recruiting high volumes of nurses. But all the other... So it sounds like actually you have a really amazing candidate service as well. Even though the client is paying you, you're doing a lot of things to help the candidates as well.
Yes, yeah, we do.
So how does the retainer work then? Because from what I understand, and I could be wrong, I don't really know the nursing recruiting space very well, but I think most of them are contingent. Is that right or wrong?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So
you're offering something which is different to what the market is accustomed to. Correct. So how do you charge for your service? And then how do you get over the resistance of them being on think, oh, well, we don't do it that way.
Again, we like to have exclusive contracts, retain contract. They have to pay us up front because we cover immigration costs.
Okay, that makes sense. So there's a logical explanation why.
Logical, yes.
You need to get paid up front because this package includes this.
So they don't have to worry about any immigration onboarding. They get ready, licensed US RN.
Wow, that's cool. So you're actually absorbing those costs as part of the fee.
Yes.
Wow, that's a huge differentiator.
Yes. Okay. And our guarantee period is also different than others. We do 12 months guarantee.
Wow. Okay.
And we fully engage with our immigration attorney on the immigration. So, yeah, we do the full process from day one to
okay.
Day
wow.
Five.
This is really cool. So now it makes sense. So for listeners, what your takeaways are, first of all, what are your differentiators? How are you going to stand out from the competition? You know, especially if you either want to charge premium fees or get retained, your clients are not going to agree to that unless you can show them
Correct. A unique
solution that is solving their problem that they can't get anywhere else. So, Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me about this growth trajectory then, because going from just you and Anthony to now you have a team of seven?
Seven, yes. Yeah, that's because of you, Mark.
Oh.
Seriously, it's huge. You made a huge impact on our lives, and I couldn't be more grateful and thankful to be with you.
Yeah. Well, Carolina, it's very kind of you to say that. I cannot take any credit because we coach lots of recruiters, but, you know, and I think we do make an impact and we do add value and we help people to grow, but your growth trajectory has been incredible. So it can't be down to me. It must be down to you. So tell me about how you grew the team, what your strategy was. Do you only recruit nurses or is it just your preference?
70% is nurses, but we are open for physician recruitment too.
Okay.
My background is also strong on physician side, like back from Dubai as well, and from my previous company, say in the US. So we do also offer the physician part.
But for your own team, you mentioned that all your recruiters are nurses. Nurses. So what's your thought process behind that?
So I'm stealing nurses to be my recruiters.
So I guess you're talking to nurses anyway.
Yeah.
So how do you identify the ones you think would make good recruiters? And what's your, do they approach you or you're talking to someone who's applied for a nursing job and you say,
yeah, they apply. They just want to step down from the nursing side and they feel that they want to help nurses,
okay,
especially on the international level. So yeah, they apply and I like the background because they already know the skill set. They know the language. It's going to be easy to connect with even physicians and clients. Clients like that.
Yes.
Clients do like that we have nurses on site. Because by the time we send that resume or the full profile, we don't just send CVs because we really send the full profile, background check, references, cover letter. So full profile, these nurses are already interviewed by nurses. So the hospital only spends 10, 15 minutes and here you go, offer.
Wow.
Because they're already
awesome.
Fully prepared. So that's way different than other agencies.
Okay. That's really cool. So you've expanded really quickly, like in a 6-month time frame. So
Yes. Tell
me that story, how that's all happened, because it seems mind-boggling.
I remember when I was coming to you and like, I can't do it, but you obviously pushed me for this again. And so when I started in 2023, that ends 2022, beginning of 2023, I brought on board a couple of friends of mine.
Okay.
Which... when, you know, they say when you go up, you lose some friends as well on the way up. And that's what happened.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to help them. They helped me. But yeah, I think that's, they say don't get involved with friends in your business.
Yeah. So this is I think overall I would agree. Did any of them work out as employees?
No.
Okay.
I've lost them as employees and as friends.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, that's... So, yeah, that's always a question is, oh, my friend is interested in working for us. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously case by case, but my instinct is probably not.
Yeah.
Because how do you... I think it's easy. I think you can become friends with people who start as employees.
Correct, yes.
Right,
but not the
other way around.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's where you really lose them, I think. And so I lost them. And I started hiring because of the volume of orders we received from clients growing really fast. And I brought the nurses on board, and I have a team in the Philippines as well.
So how many of your team are in the U.S. and how many in the Philippines?
So we have five here with myself involved, and we have in the Philippines five.
Oh, you've got five and five.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. So how do they... Do they all do the same job, or how's the team structured?
So we have director of recruitment now. She's helping us to run the team. We have 360 here in America and 180 in the Philippines.
Got it. Okay. So you have a director of recruiting in the States.
Yes.
And then you have 360 recruiters here.
Yeah.
And then your team in the Philippines are delivering candidates.
Yes, delivering candidates and marketing, branding, onboarding, helping us as well. They go beyond.
Okay.
It's, well, I've been in the Philippines many times, and they do the work.
Absolutely. Amazing. It's a great country to find team members in.
Absolutely. I encourage everybody.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. And then so the headcount has grown, but the risk there is that your overheads, your operating costs go up as well. So, but how about the revenue? How's that been growing over the last 6 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, tremendous revenue, triple, maybe even more than triple. From May, June, making 5,000 a month to 300,000 a month.
Wow. That's crazy.
475
In December. Wow, Carolina, that's incredible. Yeah. You must be so proud.
Yeah. But my team, I have to thank my team. We have wonderful. I am so lucky to have my team. Who they are, we all work together. We all supporting each other. And that's what matters for me. I'm working for them.
I love that. What now, hiring and managing team members is a challenge in itself, especially in recruiting. At the conference, Mike Williams gave a talk saying that recruiter's paradox is that we're great at recruiting for our clients, but we suck at recruiting for ourselves. But you seem to have done very well at that. How do you identify the sort of people who are going to perform and be successful?
I see in people motivation and ambition rather than skills.
Okay.
You can teach skills, but you cannot teach attitude.
True.
And all of them had great attitude, great drive in them. They want to achieve something. And we all have the same goal. And that's what matters for my team. We have one goal and we have one mission. And we create that engine that will drive for a long time.
So it's notoriously difficult to assess drive motivation, right? Because everyone in an interview is going to tell you how motivated they are.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So how do you discern the ones that really have that drive and the ones who are just telling you what you want to hear?
So I do a DISC assessment.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the behavioral background and references. I do check a lot of references. Okay. Again, I'm doing my research, going everywhere, social media, LinkedIn. And we do 3 to 4 steps interviews. Anthony always wants to get involved in interviews. He knows, he knows who is good, who is not. Like he's got that intentions. But I'm
so
very lucky.
You run a very thorough interview process for your own self as well. So 3 or 4 stages, DISC assessment. What are those stages?
So first, it's like an introduction, telling them more about who we are. We are a startup, but we kind of relaunch. So it's difficult to call us startup because of the experience. But I do tell them like we just relaunch and we kind of like a startup. So it's hard work being on the calls and... the second interview will be more about them, what they can show me, like what experience they had, if they can interview, they can check the resumes, because most of them, all of them here are nurses, So they never done recruitment. And then the third and sometimes fourth, we try to finish on the third. It's I go and really assess, ask some questions about their behavior, their person, personal life, also like will they affect the business. So I really get engaged with them for the first 3 to 4 times we talk.
Okay, fantastic. And you've had some incredible success stories. How do you get your trainee? I mean, now they're experienced, they're professional already. They're a bit older. They've already done nursing, but they're brand new rookie recruiters. How do you get them to perform so quickly for you?
I implement coaching. Like I'm kind of mirroring you to my team. We do once a week coaching. The training when they start is intense 12 weeks training. I sit down with them. They make calls. We review resumes together, which they sometimes better than me because they're nurses. But yeah, I'm giving them autonomy. They like that. They're not under pressure. And I have to say, maybe I'm lucky that I got the team I got because the third recruiter that came on board, zero recruitment experience, and the week three was 5 placements.
That's insane.
Second week.
So zero recruiting experience, second week, 5 placements. Now, okay.
It's luck.
So obviously that was a talented person, but also you must have systems in place already that they're coming into you've given them a platform.
Correct.
Where you already have a lot of tools, resources, systems, processes in place that allow them just to right away start getting traction. So can we talk a little bit about that? Because I feel like you could take that same talented recruiter, put them in a different environment, different company with maybe less support. They wouldn't be making 5 placements in week 2. So what are the tools and resources that you're – now, obviously, training is a huge amount, but what's – tools, resources that you're giving them access to so that they can really hit the ground running and be successful quickly?
Yeah, I invest in people. If I see that potential, I always say it's a worth investment. And I give them lots of tools, the AI platforms, database, access to conferences. We fly them over to conferences. Even that the director of nursing, Beverly, when she joined, she said, wow, she came from another recruitment agency. She had 3 years of experience before quitting nursing, but she was impressed as such a small company has so many tools and coaching and support that sometimes the large healthcare organization in recruitment don't have it.
Mm. So what are some of those tools then?
We use like Geosbox, Apollo, Dripify, Instantly. So we have all the tools, different job boards. Yeah.
Okay. Different job boards.
Social media, marketing, conferences.
So there, although you're a small company, you are giving them access to tools of a much bigger company. Yes. So that's incredible. Looking back, is there anything that you would do differently that, you know, or any mistakes that you think, oh, if I knew then what I know now, I would have approached that differently?
Yes. Don't hire friends.
Okay. That's the main takeaway.
That's the main takeaway. Yeah. And I wish I have done it sooner when going solo rather than waiting to that 2022, 2023. I wish I had done.
Do you know what, Carolina? I've often felt like that about my business, like, oh, I wish I'd done this sooner or whatever. But then I realized, like, it happened at the time it was meant to.
Correct.
Because who you are now, what you know, the resources, the experience, the knowledge you have wasn't the same then. And so if that opportunity had come earlier, you might not have been able to
absolutely
achieve what you have this time around. So I try not. It's hard not to like think, oh, I wish I'd done this or that. But I think we need to just feel like this has come at the perfect time. This was kind of meant to be at this time.
I agree.
And mental health, I think, is something that's important too as well. Could you say a little about your involvement in that?
Yeah, I like to get engaged with behavioral health facilities. Obviously, having that breakdown earlier in life, I really want to help these people who suffer. And so we're part of foundations like American Wish for oncology for children. I like to give back to communities. And again, coming back from when I was little, I love helping people. I teach my girls to be kind. We go every year for Christmas to hospitals, giving toys away to really show them the resilience as well. But you have to help each other. And I'm trying to gather some psychiatrists and provide a foundation of mental health here in America.
Wow. So is this something that this is another idea.
It's another idea.
All right.
I'm working on, and started writing a book as well. So I'm so excited.
Wow. Well, to be continued then. Is there anything that you wanted to chat about today that we haven't discussed yet?
I think I encourage everybody to reach to Mark, whoever struggles, and don't give up. Have dreams, and even if you feel that they don't happen today, one day they will. But don't give up, and having that consistency in life and at work, of course, it's going to be ups and downs in the business. It's normal, but just having that I can't in your head, not in your head. You can do it. Just do it and don't have regrets.
Thank you so much, Carolina. That was awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.